go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, welcome back to Car Stuff. I am Ben Bolin.
Ben the Birdman of Atlanta. Is that right? Maybe. Anyways, I'm Scott Benjamin.
Hey, Scott.
Hey.
Scott's making fun of me just a little bit because of some my checkered past with parrots, I guess.
That's some off-air banter.
Off-air banter, yeah. Which has little to do with the podcast that we have here.
Very little.
Yeah. So, Scott, let's open this with let's do a little backwards. We have an email from our good buddy Logan, who said he's from the petroleum capital of the world, Houston.
Okay.
He said we could also say he's from the internet if we want.
That sounds cool.
So this guy did us a huge favor, Scott. He writes to us and he says, "Hi, guys. I just listened to your jet-powered podcast, and I have to correct you on some things that were misstated. Grossly mistaken.
Grossly mistaken. Oh, yeah. No.
Albeit, he says, not your fault, as there are common misconceptions for those not working in the petroleum industry and, sadly, even inside it.
I feel slightly better.
I feel slightly better, too. And, you know, he's really nice about this. And Logan's an expert, Scott. This email is pretty long, and we were reading it, and it got us thinking about an idea we had kicked around before. Now, what we're going to do for this episode is instead of reading Logan's listener mail at the end, we're going to talk about how that crude oil becomes somehow the gasoline that we use to power cars. And we're going to refer to some of the things this expert has said.
Okay.
Now and then. You
know, okay. Now I'm a little bit nervous. I think that this will probably prompt another long email from Logan, but hopefully we'll get all this right. We're going to kind of follow along through our article here about, we've got an article called How Oil Refining Works. Mm-hmm. And it kind of takes us through that process, Ben, right from crude oil all the way to gasoline, other materials that are made from crude oil.
Yes,
and actually there's quite a few.
That's an excellent point, Scott, because as we know, the crude oil that you hear about in news stories or in economic reports, it's much more than just gasoline that's produced, right?
Yeah, you can make what else can you make? You make diesel fuel.
Yeah.
You can make kerosene.
Sure.
It becomes LP gas at a certain point, right?
You know,
natural gas. There's also – you can use the products to make things like crayons and plastics.
Mm-hmm.
You can make just about any – I mean, really – A lot of surprising items come from crude oil.
Yes, of which gasoline is one.
Yeah, jet fuel, heating oil,
And
just a lot of plastics and there's a ton of different things that can be made from crude oil in one way or another.
Yeah, and crayons are by far my favorite left field petroleum product there. So as we walk through this, we're just going to go along with some of the stuff in the article. So what do we mean when we say crude oil, Scott?
Crude oil is, it's oil that's being pumped out of the ground, or sometimes it's forced out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We'll learn about that in just a little bit. But a lot of times it comes out of rocks or sand. It's not always just, the liquid form that you see gushing to the surface, like maybe when Jed Clampett shoots the side of the hillside and it comes bubbling.
Crude.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that song.
It's not just that way. There's a lot of different methods for extracting it from different materials, and we'll mention some of these later. The thing is, it can be completely different depending on where you are in the world.
Yes, and not all crude oil is created equally.
No. Some of it comes out almost like water and it's real light in color, or it could be really dark in color. It could be, different. So all these different viscosities, all these different color ranges and different grades. And kind of what you have to do to get, the material that you're looking for out of that, there's a lot of chemistry involved. A lot of chemistry, a lot of technology, a lot of expensive machinery.
Mm-hmm.
That's put to use to get exactly what you want out of that material.
Now, these crude oils are useful because they contain a little something called hydrocarbons.
Mm-hmm.
No. Hydrocarbons, I hope this is not a Shyamalan-style plot twist for anyone, are so named because they contain both hydrogen and carbon.
Oh, man, you're blowing me away.
Am I blowing you away?
Yeah, so anyways, they've got a lot of there's a lot of carbon in these things,
yeah.
Right? Now, carbon, actually, the carbon, if you want to break it down by the components of crude oil, carbon is about 84% of what you'll find. Hydrogen is 14%. Then it gets down to, like, you know, items that are 1% or less. So you're talking about sulfur, nitrogen, oxygen. There's even metals in there. There's salts in there. So there's a lot of material that you don't necessarily want in crude oil that is there. How do you get it out?
Ah, yes. Well, to get it out, what you need to do is refine it or distill it. Now, when you start refining oil, you start with what's called a fractional distillation column.
Okay.
And so a fractional distillation column is our way of sort of breaking down the hydrocarbons. Oh, I should mention, right? We should mention that there are different types of hydrocarbons too. I totally skipped that part.
This gets more and more complex, Ben.
We're going to make it.
Yeah,
we've got Logan's help here.
We can do it.
All right, so we've got the different hydrocarbons here. Let's go back here. We've got, for instance, the smallest hydrocarbon is methane.
Okay.
Right? Everybody knows methane. It's gas. It's lighter than air.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also there are what are called paraffins. Okay. Now, when we're talking about these hydrocarbons, we're also talking about
that's kind of waxy, right?
Yeah. We're talking about – yeah, these can be gases or liquids at room temperatures, just depending on the specific example.
Or even – I think there's even some solids, right? Mm.
Yes. Then there are aromatics, cycloalkanes, and then alkenes. These hydrocarbons have different properties, different lengths.
Different chain lengths, right?
Yes, different chain lengths. And by combining these, by cross-linking the chains, if you will, we can create everything, I think, to quote our article, everything from synthetic rubber to the plastic and Tupperware.
Okay, so there's the natural occurring elements, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if an elements is the right way to say that or not, but natural occurring
substances
that come from these with different numbers of carbon atoms.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's carbon chains.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you combine carbon chains that aren't necessarily normally together in nature, you create synthetics. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And
I'm following along so far.
The deal with the crude oil is that when it comes straight out of the tap, when mm-hmm. Jed Clampett shoots it and it's bubbling up, it's containing hundreds of different types of hydrocarbons that all sort of mix together like vegetables in a salad. A toss out.
Well, sounds great. So how do you separate these things? That's the thing. Now, you mentioned fractional distillation. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that what the name of it was? I believe
yes,
that was
it. Yes, fractional distillation column. Okay. Excellent point, Scott. So what we do is we count on the boiling points of these hydrocarbons because different hydrocarbon chain lengths will have different boiling points.
Oh, okay.
So
now this to me, this part of this whole thing mm-hmm. is what makes the most sense. Out of
this
all
is intuitive,
of this.
Right?
Yeah, because I'm not a chemist, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell from what we're talking about here. But I'm not a chemist, but I do understand the separation idea. I can get this when I look at – especially when I look at the article that we have on site because it's very clear. I mean, there's this barrel of crude oil. Mm-hmm. It passes through a boiler, which superheats – you know, it's superheated steam, really, that heats the crude. And then that – passes over into this distillation column, which you can actually go to a refinery and you can see these columns outside. I mean, you can see these tall, relatively narrow columns, and that's where they're distilling the crude oil and they're making different products from that. Like, and if you think about this,
mm-hmm.
you know, the steam or the vapor that forms is it rises through that column. It's kind of like a series of channels or levels,
mm-hmm.
and it, each one, you know, it's allowed to pass through. It's not completely wide open. It's got these different channels or levels built in, or steps, or I mean, maybe
almost
trays.
Like
trays, maybe a better way to say it. And at each level, you know, each one kind of finds its own level as to where the vapor will begin to condense.
Mm-hmm.
And way down at the bottom, like stuff that's residual, you know, that's the heavy stuff, of course.
Yeah, some of the solids.
As you move up, you know, you get the heavy gas oil,
mm-hmm.
Then you get the lubricating oils, and then there's the gas oil or diesel, then kerosene, gasoline, naphtha, I think is the name of that mm-hmm. one, and then another type of gas at the top. And those are all separated by the number of carbons. Now, the ones with the less amount of carbon atoms rise to the very top. The ones with the most amount of carbon atoms, mm-hmm. are the heavier ones, and they remain near the bottom. But they're all separated in these channels and these sections, and I can see where it's actually very easy to separate them this way.
Yes, and we have in our article we have the a bullet point list of the information about each of these types of products from the distillation process here, mm-hmm. Including their boiling range, which is key here. So
I found that really interesting.
It is really interesting, and let's let Logan weigh in here as we move closer toward gasoline, because he said something here that I really enjoyed, and I hope the listeners enjoy it too. Gasoline is a generic term for anything that finishes distilling between 430 degrees Fahrenheit and contains a plethora of different hydrocarbons, naphthalenes, isooctanes, normal paraffins, aromatics, and olefins, and will flash at room temperature. So gasoline, despite some people's misconception, and luckily this one wasn't ours, mm-hmm. Gasoline is almost a generic term. It's more of an umbrella term, rather.
Okay, and then I noticed that diesel, which, you know, here's one thing that you and I talked about. I don't know if this is a time to get into or not, but mm-hmm. I think it seems right here.
Okay.
Gasoline and diesel are actually separated by kerosene. That's kind of it. Kerosene's kind of in the middle. And a lot of times when people think, like, well, why don't we just, you know, why don't let, here in the States,
sure.
There's this whole. I mean, I'm going to have to go
back.
Oh
yeah,
a little
let's
bit
do this. Let's so do this. We've talked about this.
This is kind of taking a different direction, but you got to follow me on this one just for a moment, and I promise we'll get back into the distillation and everything.
Can I ask the question?
And refining. Sure.
The question that we hear often is, "Hey guys, everybody in Europe's got diesel fuel. Why don't we have more diesel fuel in the United States? It's better."
That's a fantastic voice, by the way.
That is not based on anybody except one of my cousins.
Okay.
He does sound that way.
Got it. Okay. So, that's the question is, like, why don't we just have more diesel burning cars here, right?
And it's a reasonable question.
Well, we do. We're starting to get more and more here. I mean, I've seen a lot of clean diesels, you mm-hmm. know, from Mercedes and Volkswagen. But the reason is that, you know, we're in the United States here, we're set up to refine gasoline more so than we are diesel. And I don't think it's really something you can switch overnight. And I'm sure Logan can chime in on this, you know, on his own here, later. But I've always heard that, you know, we're set up more for gasoline here. In Europe, they're more set up to refine diesel fuel.
And that's an intentional setup.
And you know, you get both out of a barrel of crude oil. I understand that, but the way that you get a better yield of gasoline or diesel mm-hmm. is what you do with the gasoline or rather what you do with the byproducts afterwards. You can further refine what's left over mm-hmm. in order to get out more of what you're looking for. So
right. In
Europe, I think they're more set up to further refine, you know, the leftovers from this crude oil process to, you know, gather more diesel fuel. And here in the States, I guess we're set up to gather more gasoline. We're trying to get a higher yield of gasoline out of every barrel of oil.
Mm. And also, this is one last point on our sidebar here. One thing that you and I have mentioned is that having a much larger population of diesel-fueled cars could become a careful what you wish for situation, because as we know, the diesel price can fluctuate.
Yeah, and you know it goes way high here in the States. It could stay high, mm-hmm. and then you've got a diesel fuel vehicle that stays high. And the other thing is, you know, the other thing that we hear,
what's that?
Why don't they just build diesel refineries? Why don't we just build a refinery that's, you know, built just for diesel fuel? Why don't we just start building more of those and building less gasoline refineries?
Yes.
The problem is they literally cost billions and billions and billions of dollars to build. I mean,
it's not like making a sandwich.
It's major undertaking, and even, you know, just to maintain these things is millions and millions of dollars every year. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that you can just decide to do and do it. It's something that, you know, has to be really, really well thought out and planned for.
Yes, and we want that question to sort of stay in people's minds. We hope that we're addressing a little bit more about it. And as you said, we are excited to see more diesel vehicles coming out in the United States, and diesel is becoming more widely available, mm-hmm. you know, as a vehicle option.
But maybe one of the better options right now for us, because of, you know, the current situation that we're in, you know, we're trying to lower the price of fuel. We're trying to
increase the efficiency.
Trying to increase the yield from every barrel mm-hmm. of crude oil. We're still burning a lot of gasoline here in the United States, and you know, likewise around the world. Really, we're burning a lot of gasoline, diesel, mm-hmm. And just fuel in general. I really think the key to this is how they handle it after that initial refining process. You know, when they try to recombine these hydrocarbons. The yield issue is the big thing.
So then we get to this. This is such an excellent way to segue into this.
Great, get me out of this.
Don't worry, buddy. We've got one of the next steps after fractional distillation. Mm-hmm. After we have heated up the crude oil, we've let it vaporize and condense the vapor. We go to another technique, chemical processing. Now, this applies to the existing fractions, and we use those to make others through the conversion process. Now, what can this do? On a basic level, this can take longer hydrocarbon chains, break them into shorter ones. That's a basic example. Mm-hmm. So this would allow a refinery, for instance, to turn diesel fuel into gasoline depending on the demand
for
gas.
And that's called cracking.
Yeah.
When you take larger hydrocarbons and you break them into smaller pieces, that's called cracking.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got also the refineries have to remove the impurities we mentioned before that are already present mm-hmm. in crude oil.
Mm-hmm.
And once we've got all these fractions, remember earlier we talked about cross-linking hydrocarbons, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's once we've got the impurities out, once we have our fractional distillation, our chemical processing, and then the impurities in that order, then we can start combining these various fractions to create different products.
Unification.
Ah, yes.
So that's unification. That's when you're taking smaller pieces and making larger pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I guess the last one, if you want to just get into it, the chemical processing, the last part would be alteration, where you're rearranging the hydrocarbons and mm-hmm. making different products out of them. So, you know, the chemical processing, there's more to it than just, you know, that one simple step. It's there's three steps within that step itself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to get too deep into that, I don't think. We'll let Logan maybe explain that.
We should
have him on as a special guest.
He raised the idea. He seems like I think he might be okay with it. Now, he does have a good point here when we talk about the octane stuff. And I wanted to read this part out loud.
Sure.
Octane value does not necessarily correlate to harder to burn. The actual name for the octane value of the fuel is the anti-knock index. And the higher the octane number is, the more compression of fuel can be put through before pre-detonation or knock occurs, meaning it's more likely to still be in a vapor and not in a flame when the spark plugs ignite.
Spark plug
ignites it.
Yeah. All right, makes sense. Because I guess that was my fault. I usually say higher octane, harder to burn. That's just that's kind of a simple way I remember it. But that's a much more concise way to put that. Thank you, Logan.
Don't beat yourself up.
That's right. So here's where we are in the refining process.
Yes.
There's four steps in the refining process, basically. Distill, mm-hmm. You convert it through chemical processing, and you treat it, and then you combine it. So that's if you want to just make it that simple,
yeah.
You could do that.
Scott, let's dig a little bit deeper into cracking.
Okay.
Notice I'm saying it carefully.
Oh,
cracking.
Cracking. I know why you're saying it carefully, because I think a lot of people are going to hear this, and they're going to hear a kind of a buzzword that's been thrown around the news a lot called fracking.
Totally different.
That is totally different. And fracking, I mean, just if you want to quickly get this out there, that's a way of getting natural gas out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it involves extracting, you know, this natural gas from shale rock layers that are way deep inside of the mm-hmm. earth. They're talking like a mile deep. You know,
yeah,
that's how far down they go.
It's down.
It's where they force fluids into the shale area, and it pushes the gas kind of through these different channels in the rock where it normally wouldn't flow. It forces it out of the earth mm-hmm. is what it does. And there's a lot of controversy over this, you know, what it's doing. But if you read some information about fracking, you can find that, you know, they generally, you know, they seal the well with cement. They do everything they can to protect the groundwater in the area. I don't think there's ever been a case of groundwater contamination due to fracking, at least according to the articles that I've read recently. And it's a different thing. It's hydraulic fracturing. That's what fracking is. Something totally different. That's natural gas.
It's a method of extracting the gas, whereas cracking is a series or a type of step in the refining process.
Yeah. We mentioned that it's taking larger hydrocarbons and breaking them into smaller pieces. And the reason you'd want to do that is because, you know, of all of the crude oil that you distill or that you refine, that initial run through, only 40% of that distilled crude oil is actually gasoline. Something like that. You know, that's a ballpark figure, but 40%. And what's remaining can be further distilled. I mean, that's where, you know, that's how you can increase your yield of gasoline.
Right. And there are a couple types of cracking. Well, there's more than a couple. Mm-hmm. Here's a couple of.
Okay.
There's thermal cracking. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where you heat large hydrocarbons at high temperatures. And sometimes you have high pressure as well, and that makes them break apart. So a high-temperature steam, and when I say high temperature, we're talking 1,500 Fahrenheit, 816 Celsius.
Whoa.
Yeah, hot stuff. And this would break, for instance, ethane, butane into ethylene, benzene. These are used to manufacture various chemicals. Now, there's vis breaking, where the residual from the distillation tower is heated. And this is a little bit lower temperature, 900 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's cooled with gas oil, and then it's flashed, rapidly burned, in a distillation tower. And this process can reduce the viscosity of some heavyweight oils, and this is what makes tar.
Oh, okay.
And then there's coking. Residual from the distillation tower gets heated to temperatures gets heated above 900 degrees, and then it cracks into heavy oil, gasoline, and naphtha. When this process is done, it leaves behind a heavy carbon residue called coke. And the coke is cleaned from the cokers, and they sell it.
Okay, so coke is like that's pure carbon, right?
It's almost – yeah.
Okay.
It's almost completely pure. This is not what goes in your soda drinkers. Don't worry.
Please don't drink it.
Please don't.
Don't even taste just a little bit of it.
Right. And then there's a catalytic cracking. Now, of course, it's called catalytic cracking because it uses a catalyst to speed up the cracking reaction. So what is a catalyst at this point? Well, a catalyst would be something like aluminum hydrosilicate. So in fluid catalytic cracking, they use a hot, wait for it, fluid catalyst, right?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So when we dig in, this stuff might not be as confusing as it seems.
Oh, it is. To me, it is, Ben. Some of the chemistry stuff, I get a little bit lost in it, but the processes, I really do. Once you step back and look at it, you understand where they're going with them.
Mm-hmm. And one great thing about this article here is that it has some very good visual accompaniment.
Yeah, you know what? If you're like me and kind of, you know, after a while your eyes kind of glass over and it's like, oh, I forgot what you just said. I'm thinking about my dog or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, like, just take a look at the article. A lot of this stuff makes sense when you see it in visually laid out the way we have it. I mean, some of these diagrams, extremely helpful to me because I right away got the distillation. I understood that right away. Some of the things like, you know, the unification that we're going to talk about and, some of the cracking that you mentioned. Some of those things are much more clear when they're laid out visually.
A picture is always worth 1,000 words.
Yeah, 2,000.
2,000 words in this case.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Unification.
Yep. Unification, it was mentioned that just a moment ago. That was where you take smaller pieces and you make larger ones out of them.
It's kind of opposite of cracking.
Makes sense. You're unifying these chains.
Ah.
So the major part of the major unification process is called catalytic reforming. And what it does is it uses a catalyst. It's usually platinum or platinum rhenium mix. And it combines low-weight naphtha into aromatics, which are used in making chemicals or in blending gasoline. So one of the crazy things about this is that the byproduct is hydrogen gas, which is then later used for hydrocracking, or, you know, it's sold as hydrogen gas. You could just buy hydrogen gas, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, those out there who are looking for their fuel cell vehicle fill up, this is where it comes from. It comes from unification, but it's still through the, you know, you can derive it from crude oil, which is kind of interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
crazy.
You know, you can still get even a little percentage of it, you know, out of actual crude oil.
Yeah, that was when we were checking out this article. That was something that was very new to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, not being a chemist.
So the next one, the last little bit here is alteration.
Yeah, alteration is more like a remix. I you know, remember when I went through that phase where I had to describe everything as a gritty reboot?
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, I'm not going to do that this time.
Because
it doesn't apply. In alteration, let's see, one common process that we could use to explain this is alkylation. In alkylation, we take compounds that have a low molecular weight, and this would be like propylene or butylene, and we mix them in the presence of a catalyst like hydrofluoric acid or sulfuric acid, then this produces a high-octane hydrocarbon. And high-octane hydrocarbons are used in gasoline blends, as we said with Logan's help, to reduce knocking.
Okay, so this is where we get into the whole octane issue, right?
Right.
Okay, so this is you can find out how, you know, a gasoline are blended together to reduce knocking and how octane works. We've got a whole article about that. What I find interesting is this rearranging of chains.
Yes.
Now, rearranging of chains. Now, this is where we get into kind of combining items, and this is I think this is where we get into like the synthetics and the plastics and you know, the blending and treating different materials and creating things. This is I find this maybe the most interesting out of the whole thing.
Yeah, this is really where we start to see some high art in here.
Yeah, because you're taking the fractions, you're taking the leftover bits, and you can treat and blend these fractions together, as it says in the article, to create different items, right? So you can take these leftover hydrocarbons, leftover, you know, the carbon atoms, and build whatever you want out of them, and well, to a limit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things that you can kind of blend them together to form, you can form jet fuels, you can form diesel fuels, and heating oils, and chemicals, and you know, things like that. Gasoline, of course, and all different types of lubricating oils if you want to, but that's stuff that we've already heard about.
Mm-hmm.
You can also take some of these fractions and build even, you know, completely different chains. This is where the synthetics come in.
Yes.
And you can build you build synthetic rubbers and plastics and, you know, anything that you really, I guess at this point, sky's the limit, right?
Yeah.
It kind of depends on your level of chemistry prowess.
And one thing that was one thing that was kind of reassuring to me as we learned more about this was that this the common barrel of crude oil, not only is it being used for much more than gasoline, just typical gasoline in a vehicle, it's also the subject of so much research and so many efforts across the globe to find ways to get the maximum energy value and use out of it. You know, it's not as though somebody is saying, well, this part is good for gas and let's throw the rest in a river or something. And while we have by no means completely closed the door on this science, as a matter of fact, I'd argue we're at the opposite stage. It seems like there are increasingly innovative ways to use and combine components of crude oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You're trying to squeeze every last drop of everything we can out of a barrel of crude oil. And I mean, when you look at the list of what we can do with crude oil right now.
Crayons, man.
It's pretty amazing. Like, yeah, crayons blow you away, I know. But, you know, that's just one small little part of it. I mean, there's so much you can do with it. Like we said, 40% is gasoline. I don't see why they couldn't even, you know, start to up that even. I'm sure they do. They just continue to increase the yield of crude oil. But they're doing the same thing in Europe, trying to increase the yield of diesel. So it kind of depends on what you're looking for to get out, you know, to get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're necessarily going to find a lot more different uses for it, but maybe find a way to increase different aspects of it, you know, to make more, like a higher percentage should go towards this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's all in the chemistry, all in the technology. And I don't know. It's, way over my head, I'll tell you that, Ben. I'm struggling to get through this one, and as most people will probably hear, but, you know, that's because it's a lot of chemistry, and I'm more into the, you know, what you do with the gas once it's out.
It's in the car.
Yeah, once you pump it in the car.
I want to take a second and head off any hate mail we get about fracking. Guys, it is a controversial method. There's no disputing that. Mm-hmm. Again, we're mentioning it only to talk about cracking. So,
we're making not
to give us death threats.
Trying to make the distinction, because I think a lot of people would hear what we're saying and think we were saying fracking. So
right.
I want to make sure.
Fracking is in no way a part of the normal oil refining process.
Correct.
That is cracking with a C. We'd also like to thank Logan. And funny story with these emails, the email he sent us, Logan was writing about the jet-powered stuff. Logan, I'm sorry we didn't have time to read all of the email on the air, but we really appreciate you writing in. I wanted to point out just a couple of other...
You know, he put a lot of work into that.
He did put a lot of work into it, and you know that you and I really believe that hard work should be rewarded. So I wanted to point out a couple of things here that he said. U.S. military JP-8, that fuel, is mm-hmm. actually very similar to pump diesel. It's green in color, has a flash point similar to diesel, and it fails most tests designed to run kerosene, funny enough. I prefer British jet fuel, he adds. And he said, thanks for keeping the podcast going. Makes my Tuesday, Thursday drives home much better. And so we want to give a big thank you to Logan, and we want to say to everyone, we would love to hear from you. If you want to write an email to us when next time you're at the gas pump and you're thinking, holy smokes, the plastic parts of this pump are also made from crude oil.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot, if you look around you, you'll find a lot of items that have been made from crude oil.
So thanks so much for listening, guys. Thanks again to Logan. If you feel like dropping us a line, please send us a note on our Facebook page, give us a holler on Twitter, or send an email to us directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.